You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hey everybody, this is David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast here on hoopfeed.com. Now, I may be in Connecticut where it's getting cold, but you look around and I'm doing a little California dreaming today, and I'm pleased to have a transplanted Northerner that is now making her home very successfully in California, the head basketball coach of the Cal Bears, and that is Lindsay Gottlieb. Coach, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, David. Thanks for having me. Can't say that I'm complaining too much about this California weather, but I am an East Coaster originally, so I know how it feels to be out there as well.
Well, that's, it's one of the reasons why I like you, Coach, is, you went from Scarsdale to Rhode Island to Syracuse. So Richmond is sort of a preface to getting a little bit warmer. And then you said the heck with it and went out west.
I was definitely following the best coaching jobs, but when I went to New Hampshire after being in Syracuse, I think I was the only one where I went to New Hampshire, and it was actually an upgrade in terms of temperature. But I think I found my home in the Bay Area, and definitely, excited when I get a chance to go back to the East Coast, but this is a pretty neat place to be and run a basketball program.
Well, you're definitely doing a great job with the program, and congratulations right off the bat because your team is now number 9 in the AP poll, which puts it at its highest level this year. So congratulations for the great success to start the season.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think the rankings and sort of the respect that we're getting nationally certainly speaks to the young women in our program and how talented they are and how hard they've worked. And we need to continue to do that. But it's definitely nice to get some recognition across the country because, as we know, sometimes West Coast schools don't get the attention they deserve, so we're very appreciative of that.
The team sits at 7-1 right now at exam break, and the only loss was a hard-fought game that was by no stretch a blowout to number 4 Duke. So that certainly speaks even more volumes about the way that the team has performed so far. It's a couple of really nice wins. Played some nice teams, Georgetown, Old Dominion, and, of course, Duke.
Yeah, as you get to know me, I'm pretty intentional with everything that we do, and we made that schedule for a reason. We knew we would have a very solid, team coming back, and we wanted to go play on the road against the top 5 caliber opponent, the type of opponent we might need to beat in postseason to get to a Final Four or to put ourselves, and our players in that situation. So Duke is absolutely legit. They are, picked by everyone to go to the Final Four for a reason. It was a tremendous atmosphere. But I actually think our players came away, we struggled to shoot the ball in the first half. We struggled to put points on the board, but played them even in the second half. And I think our players came away certainly being exposed in some areas and say we need to get better. But I thought we got out of a lot of the trip saying this is the level we want to be at, and we're right there, and we're looking forward to more opportunities to play some great competition and win those games and put ourselves truly in the upper echelon of women's college basketball.
You've still got a couple of tough non-conference games with Northwestern, Kansas, and George Washington still coming up before the calendar turns to next year. But one of the things about these the conference expansions that kind of bums me out a little bit is, you get conferences like the Pac-12 and the ACC that are up to 18 games playing just in conference. So it really hampers your ability to schedule some of these out-of-conference games that you'd like to have.
Yeah, the Pac-12, I mean, even when we were the Pac-10, we had a full slate of conference games. Before, when there were 10 teams, we played 9 teams twice and ended up with 18. And now we have 12 teams, and so they do a little bit of a rotating schedule, but we have 18 games. I do think we have to be very strategic about the non-conference and getting our RPI up. And again, I was intentional with saying, let's play the Big Ten with Northwestern, let's play the Big East with Georgetown, and the Big 12 with Kansas, and not to mention Duke. So I think we've done a nice job of really putting ourselves in a position, if we can take care of business here in the rest of non-conference, to have a good RPI, to be noticed by the NCAA committee and nationally, and really just, we want to recruit at a level where players know that they're going to come in and have those great games, ESPN-type games. And so that's the direction, where our program is going. We want to continually do that. So the non-conference opportunities we have, we want to make sure that we have some really, really exciting competition in there.
With the difficulty in the schedules because of the amount of conference games everybody has, plus the fact that things have gotten so expensive,
Yeah.
Are you finding it harder to try and find some of the East Coast teams to schedule home and homes, or just to you know, come out to where you are?
Scheduling is always kind of an interesting science. A lot of work goes into it. We certainly put out a lot of feelers, but we have to be willing, you know, to get on a plane and go far away and play people. And that's what we did with Duke, and they'll come back here, you know, next year, which will be a great, you know, experience. Chelsea Gray coming home to California and, you know, having Duke in our building. But we're going to find, you know, the women's basketball powerhouses who are willing to do a home and home. You know, we've done it with Rutgers in the past. Now it's Duke, and we'll go back to Georgetown next year. So we're always going to fly where we need to make sure that this basketball program is at that level, and I really I'm thankful to our administration for making that financial commitment. But scheduling is not easy, you know, and you get really good and people don't want to play you, and being in California, we have to be willing to get on a plane and go somewhere, because really, you know, the best teams out here are in our own conference. So so we try and make sure that schedule is balanced and it's competitive, and it puts our players in a situation to be ready for really, really good conference competition and postseason competition.
And the other thing people don't think about is, you know, Cal being a state university, you know, you've got locals that they would like to see you play. And I'm sure that you'd like to play and have those local rivalries. I mean, up here in Connecticut, you know, for a while there were games against Hartford, and then they stopped, and now they've resumed, as example. I mean, I saw that, you know, you played Bakersfield, you know, and there's a myriad of other opportunities to play Cal State schools.
Absolutely. You know, we like doing that. We play St. Mary's almost every year. They're, you know, 10 minutes down the road. There's always a good crowd for that. We played Cal Poly this year. We want to make sure that we're, number one, not taxing our student-athletes and traveling all over the place, you know, when we don't have to. I think, you know, people want to see, you know, good local competition around here, so we'll definitely do that. We'll always try to go, you know, to somebody's tournament and maybe have our players see a different part of the country, and then we also have to make sure that we have some really high RPI, highly competitive games in there too. So I think, again, it when you have that perfect schedule and it feels balanced, you're doing something right, because it takes a lot of work.
Now, looking at your team, it's funny. Your team is sitting here. You're tied for number one in conference in scoring, and you're with Stanford, and you're right behind Stanford in team defense at number two in the conference. Yet when you look at the individuals, you know, Brittany Boyd is the leading scorer on the team. She's only 12th in the conference. Now, we're used to that up here in Connecticut, not having anybody being a leading scorer and spreading it around. It's nice to see that there are other programs that are into the balance and not featuring that one particular player. You know, you got five people in double figures on this team right now.
Yeah, you know, David, it's interesting you say that. At one point we had six in double figures, and, you know, I sit on you know, the All-American Committee and the Wade Trophy Committee, and we have that discussion all the time, you know, that there's often three Connecticut players or two or three Notre Dame players who are in the conversation, and we have to really look critically at, yes, maybe their scoring would be down, but how good is the team and how effective is that individual? And, you know, again, not to put us in a category yet with a UConn, but I think that's the way that we've developed this team. I mean, our strength is our depth. On any given night, we might have a different leading scorer. We obviously have a very deep post rotation, and any one of them is capable of a double-double regularly. You know, Leja Clarendon doesn't necessarily score the most for us night in and night out, but when we play Georgetown, you know, she has 20. When we play, you know, big-time competition, she is as capable of any guard. Obviously, Brittany can get you 10 assists, but this year has really upped her scoring and, you know, had 28 at Duke. So I think we're built a little differently than some teams that rely on one or two people, and I hope that, you know, as a long season continues, that is really, really to our benefit, because we can win through someone having a bad shooting night, or we can win through foul trouble. And more importantly, we're just hopefully hard to stop. If you take away one thing, maybe there's someone else or a different aspect of our game that can step up. But it's definitely a different look than most teams have with our ability to spread out the offense.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that team. And let's start with, as you mentioned, the senior, Leja Clarendon. She, you know, last year all-conference, preseason all-conference, member of the Naismith watch list preseason, and probably the one that you like the most is a nominee for the Lowe Senior Class Award, because it also covers the off-the-court exploits of the players.
Yeah, I mean, this kid is a dream to be around and a dream to coach. And to be honest, I actually think she's probably one of the most underrated guards in the country. You know, nationally, I think people on the West Coast really know. She has as good of a mid-range game as you'll find. I've had WNBA people tell me that. She's really, really good off the balance and a legit mid-range pull-up. She can get to the rim. Her three-point shooting percentage is way up this year, and she's a terrific defender. She's plays more off the ball now that we have Brittany Boyd, but she's capable of playing the point. You know, we had Georgetown come out here, and obviously, you know, you're familiar with Sugar Rogers. She's a tremendous scorer. But Belazer did a nice job, you know, defending her and also added 20 points. So I think she's really good. I think she's going to be a difference maker for us. Again, if we want to win those games against top five, top 10 caliber competition, we know that Belazer's going to have a big night for us. And she is the hardest worker any of us have been around. She's a tremendous student. You know, one of those kids that's not happy when she gets a B or B plus because it brings down her GPA. So I think she's someone that's going to continue to have a great senior year for us, and someone we'll see at the next level as well.
And and the team is young. She's one of only four seniors that are involved with the team. Talia Caldwell. This is always a challenge when I try and get all the kids' names right. Talia Caldwell is also a strong scorer, averaging over 10 points per game. Then there's Eliza Pierre, who is more of a role player but handles the ball and is second on the team in assists, and, of course, Tierra Rogers.
Exactly. So that senior class, you know, there are four of them. They've been through a lot. You know, they came in as part of, you know, a very, very heralded recruiting class. And then in their first 2 years, they were called underachievers, which I thought was kind of a hard rap because they did win an NIT, you know, championship. But to see this group kind of persevere and now be in a position where they've led their team to ninth in the country is remarkable. You know, you're probably familiar with Tierra's story. She is a medical redshirt after losing her father. He was shot at the halftime of a high school game. You know, she then came to Cal, and in the fall of her freshman year was diagnosed with a heart condition that would never allow her to play. But this young woman is on track to graduate. She's been a part of our team. She rarely misses practice. She's involved with everything. So we consider them a four-person senior class, even though three of them suit up. And they're just great leaders for us. You know, Talia is a double-double, you know, threat all the time. She's really good. Eliza, you know, I asked her to come off the bench last year when we had this, you know, very precocious, you know, talented freshman come in, and Brittany Boyd, and Eliza said, absolutely, coach. Not only did she play that role, but she took Brittany under her wing. She is probably the best on-ball defender you'll find, you know, around. And I can't say enough about the four of them, and I think they've done a great job leading because we do really rely on the production of Rashonda Gray, who's a sophomore, and Brittany Boyd, who's a sophomore, and Afure, Jimma Rigby, who's a junior. So we look at that senior class as like our stalwart leader. And I think that they're very much responsible for the uprise, you know, that we've had in the last couple of years here.
Yeah, I don't know how you could be involved with this program and not see Tierra Rogers, and the fact that she, as you mentioned, you know, people have to understand that, you know, this is a person that knew that she wasn't going to be playing, but it's still there every day for practice, and it's an integral part on the bench. You can see her in the games, and, you know, how can you not be inspired or push yourself harder when you see what she does?
It's unbelievable. I mean, this young woman has dealt with more than anyone should have to deal with in their lifetime, you know, and for her, it happened in, you know, a very short amount of time, and she's been very open, you know, with her struggles and how, you know, that was hard for her, but she never gave up on the Cal education. She never gave up on being part of this program, and I think what she has found is, you know, how can I help others? And so I get calls from coaches around the country when they have a player, you know, maybe who's declared a medical redshirt or has a heart condition, or, hey, can Tierra help with this or that? And she's been remarkable with that. She recently found out that she's going to be part of a clinical trial to help find a cure for her condition. So probably it won't be, you know, maybe in the time that would allow her to take part in basketball, but she really wants to be able to help someone else that comes along and has this affliction. So she's remarkable. I think there are a lot of stories on our team of young women who have gone through a lot, and yet they smile and laugh and are great to coach and be around, and they're high achieving Cal student athletes. So I'm very, very fortunate just to be around them every day. They make my job very rewarding.
And to give credit where it's due, too, Cal has never backed off or given any type of indication that, you know, there would be any backing off of their commitments to Tierra Rogers either. You know,
not ever.
You guys have
second.
Done everything
ever,
possible.
Yeah. And Joanne Boyle, you know, who was obviously my mentor and was here set that precedent. There was no question, you know, in her mind when this happened that we would all stick by Tyra. And when I got the job, it was a no-brainer. She is as much an impact on this program than anyone has ever been, and she's never scored a point. And I think that says something about her character and just about the nature of our program. Our players respect Tyra. They're very, very close with her. They lean on her for advice. So it's a pretty neat story for sure, and I think any success that we have, everyone points to Tyra as being a huge part of that.
Now, moving on to somebody that has been scoring points, I do have to thank you because you make me look great. When we had our NCAA roundtable to start the season, we had Michelle Smith and Doug Feinberg at EAP and some others, and we each went around and said, I want you to give me one person to watch for that you think is going to be to watch for. And I went before Doug, and I took Brittany Boyd. And Doug was mad at me because that was his choice. But you have made us both look fantastic this year because this kid, as fun and exciting as she was to watch last year, she's turned it up another notch this year.
Yeah, well, I think you're both pretty smart with that pick. I like to tell people she's absolutely worth the price of admission. I think she's good for the women's college basketball. She plays with a flair and a funness almost to her game that I think is really good for all of us. You know, I put the ball in Brittany's hands pretty early in her freshman year, knowing that she's the type of kid you got to let her play through some mistakes. She has such fabulous instincts and basketball IQ, and what, again, to her credit, she's added this year is she's in much better shape. She has just a better understanding of the demands of college basketball. She was always ready to compete and was always a gamer, and now I think she understands all the nuances that go into it. And she's still growing and she's still learning, which is scary, you know, because she's very, very talented. But the kid is just very fast end-to-end. She loves to pass the ball. She has a knack for finding seams and finding her teammates. And she's really worked on her shot, which is something that, you know, I think as she continues to improve that will make her, you know, one of the best, really the best guards in the country. But there's no question she puts on a show on the basketball court. We're very, very lucky to have her. And she's the local kid. You know, she went to Berkeley High, so she brings out a lot of fans. And she's a lot of fun to coach and a lot of fun to be around.
You know, she reminds me in a lot of ways of being like a young Kathy Pondexter at this point in her career.
Well, you would make her day if I told her you said that, because that's whose game she tries to emulate.
Oh, really?
Yes, she's a Cappy fan. We give her a hard time. We say, well, you know, you got to get to the point where, you know, maybe that's a teammate one day. But yes, she definitely likes Cappy. Brittany is big and strong and explosive. I mean, it's really, really hard to keep her out of the paint. And then she also has this just ability to put the ball in the hands of our post players and feed them baskets. You know, and I think that we're at our best when she has 7, 8, 9 assists, you know, in a game, because it means we're playing transition the way we want to play and that we're distributing the basketball. And she is definitely, you know, a tremendous transition guard. And like I said, has worked really hard in every aspect of her game so that she can score in the quarter court as well. But I think that people on the East Coast haven't seen her, are missing out. Hopefully, you know, we'll get some games on ESPN this year and the Pac-12 network. More people will get to see her, but she's definitely fun. You know, and then the other kid on our team that is just jaw-dropping in terms of some of the things she can do is Jennifer Brandon. You know, Brittany will lob some plays, you know, some balls up to Jen, and Jen almost dunks it, you know, and it's, you say, gosh, you know, this is the type of thing that you want basketball fans to see, and I think that'll help, you know, the women's game in general when they see fun, exciting plays like that.
Absolutely, and, you know, I was just going to get to Jennifer Brandon and mention the fact, you know, she's hitting over 50% of her shots. The rebounding, though, I mean, the how often do you see a college player averaging a double-double?
And, you know, and I mean, David, she's playing 22 minutes a game, 23 maybe.
Yeah, 24, I think, yeah.
Yeah, 24. So you think about a kid like that, if she were playing, you know, 34, 35 minutes a game, the rebounding numbers could be staggering. And that's, again, a function of our depth. You know, we want to be fresh and we want to have everyone, you know, on full tilt in March. And so I don't necessarily play them 35 minutes if, you know, because we have that depth in the post rotation. But Jennifer Brandon is a rebounding machine. She set a single season rebounding record at Cal last year. And again, playing, you know, 25 minutes a game. But she, I think, had a double-double in 4 of our first 5 games. She's really worked on her skill level so that you see her shooting percentage much higher. But she has been described as a jumping bean, you know, like a pogo stick. She can go up and get balls and just has a real knack for rebounding. And to be honest, our shooting percentage as a team is higher this year, so there are less rebounding opportunities, but that kid is something special. She reminds me of Rebecca Brunson, you know, in the WNBA and who played at Georgetown, just her ability to get up and get rebounds and control a game from the paint.
Well, that's certainly quite a person to be a reminder of, you know, especially the work ethic of somebody like a Rebecca Brunson.
Yeah, Rebecca was at Georgetown when I was at Syracuse, my first coaching job, and I remember, you know, usually all the accolades are UConn, you know, or Rutgers at the time, but I think she led the conference in scoring and rebounding. You know, she was basically the show at Georgetown at the time. And again, the kids on our team have different roles, you know, because we're deep, and I think we have, you know, talent spread out. You know, you don't get necessarily the numbers night in and night out because, you know, we really rotate minutes. But Jen had 24 points and 24 rebounds against Ohio State last year. So I think in any given moment, I think she's had a couple, you know, over 15 rebound games this year already. So they're obviously capable of doing some spectacular things on any given night.
Well, you know, the Pac-12 in itself, you got three teams that are still undefeated, Stanford, Utah, and Colorado. And through a quirk, I would say it's a quirk, no one was out to get you, you've got quite a January.
Yes, I guess you know, I'm supposed to say that that's a good thing, right? Where we all really want the Pac-12 to be really strong, and it is. But I'm looking at that January schedule going, gosh, can we spread it out a little bit? I think we start off the new year by going to what we call the mountain trip at Utah, at Colorado. And we all learned very quickly last year that that is one heck of a difficult trip with the altitude and with both teams being very good. We were able to get out of there last year with two wins, but our players, I think, really understood how difficult that is. So we'll go there to start. Then we come home and we have the number one team in the nation, Stanford, twice in 1 week. So we're hoping that that's a good week for us. And then we have UCLA and USC at home. And obviously UCLA has done some great things so far this season. So overall, the strength of the Pac-12 is going to help us all. You know, we deserve multiple teams in the tournament. I think it's going to help all of our RPI better seeds. But obviously we're looking at a very, very tough early stretch, and our players are going to have to be ready for it. And it's a good challenge, and hopefully we can be clicking at that point in the year.
And then Colorado and Utah come in right after the USC and UCLA too. So
exactly.
The entire month
exactly.
of January, you know, right now the way that it's looking like is, you know, with the exceptions of USC and UCLA, who are obviously two top quality programs, UCLA being ranked, the month of January is all against undefeated teams right now.
I know, it's crazy, and it'll be a good challenge for us. I think that, you know, our players like the big stage. You know, they like the big games, and I think motivation won't be a problem whatsoever. We just need to be sharp, you know, and I think oftentimes you measure your season by, you know, the big wins, you know, over the ranked teams. But I think what often leads to success, and I thought what was one of our better qualities last year is that we were consistent, you know, that we didn't lose games that we were supposed to win, you know, quote unquote, and we didn't have kind of bad losses. And I think that month is going to be a big test for us to say, hey, can we get up for Stanford? You know, there's going to be a lot of hype around that game. But in the mid, the Stanford game is not as relevant if we don't, you know, have a good showing against Colorado and Utah, if we don't, you know, win on our home floor against, you know, two very, very good LA teams coming in here. So those are the messages we'll be giving our players, you know, as that month comes along, and we'll probably have to just take one day at a time and be ready for some really good competition. But it's really good for our league that there's so many good teams this year.
I know that Stanford is number one in the country, and they deserve that, rightfully so, after taking out Baylor especially. But come in the preseason, a lot of people thought that you guys had a shot to upend them this year. I mean, you came in the coaches' poll. You were very close, finishing a very close second. Does it seem, when you look at the Stanford team, that they're a little more vulnerable this year than in some of the prior years, now that Nneka Ogwumike is gone?
Well, you would have thought if they graduated, you know, not only the Pac-12 player of the year, but, you know, the runaway WNBA rookie of the year, that there'd be some kind of vulnerability. But obviously they've proven, you know, that people are stepping up, and no one was happier than us when they beat Baylor. I mean, I was texting Tara, and it's a great win. But I do think that you would hope that it's a year that we play a different style than they do, that hopefully we can, you know, pose some problems for them as well, knowing that, you know, they're extremely well coached. Chennai is playing terrific. They have other people stepping up, which is what they always do, you know, and they're very well coached. So we'd like to think, you know, it's a great year for us to take our shot, but obviously that's said with a ton of respect for the way that they've been playing, for the way that, you know, that they've played over the last several years. You know, you don't go to five straight Final Fours unless you're doing a lot of things right. So we're looking forward to playing them. But like I said, you know, the championship could come down maybe to the other games, you know, and who's most consistent against everybody else. So it's good for Bay Area basketball when we're competitive with Stanford, and we're looking to make this, you know, quite the year for that.
Well, it's a good period for the national basketball when you have more than one team start to really pick up the pace and out west, and not just have everybody being able to say, oh, it's Stanford and everybody else, and not just Cal, but also you know, the Utah, Colorado, some of the other teams, even looking at the success, you know, that Kelly Graves has had at Gonzaga, even though Stanford just handled them, he's having a bit of a down year. But, you know, it's good to see the West Coast programs continue to grow and improve, and that's something that you are really should be commended for, because it's not just you're having a good season and you have a good team, but you've really continued to take what Coach Boyle did, as you said, your mentor, and taken it and even kicked it up another notch and continued to develop a program.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, I said to anyone who would listen when I got the job that, you know, I was very vocal about, you know, Cal being a wonderful fit for me and not just any job but a dream job. But I was very, you know, adamant in saying I don't want to say, okay, you know, I'm at Cal and just happy to do that. I really believe that the time is right and the landscape is right in women's college basketball to have another team out west other than Stanford, you know, be perennially in that national conversation. And obviously Kelly's done a wonderful job at Gonzaga, and I know other teams in our conference are fighting for that as well. But, you know, if the best players on the West Coast want to go 3,000 miles away from home, more power to them, but we want to make sure there's a program where they can get a great education, have a shot at championships, be able to talk realistically about Sweet 16s and Final Fours, and be able to do that, you know, at the number one public school. And so we feel like, you know, this is the program that we can do that with. And I've been also very clear, and I don't want to say, okay, we have a talented group for a year or two or 3 years. We want to make it a sustainable program. And I look at the places like UConn who have done that, and Tennessee and Duke, and we have to do it our own way. You know, we're not trying to be anybody else, but I think it's a good time in women's college basketball to say there's an opening for people, you know, coming in with fresh energy to do that, and that's the type of program we want to create here. And I think these players have really bought into that, and they're certainly laying the groundwork for years and years to come of success out here, I hope.
Well, Coach, congratulations on a wonderful start, and I know that we're going to see deep in the NCAA tournament this year. You've created a fun, exciting team to watch that we'll all get to see if the Pac-12 Network ever straightens everything out there, and when ESPN gets wiser and starts showing some more of these games from the West Coast.
Well, I appreciate it. When you do get to see us, feel free to give me some feedback and some pointers. Always love your perspective.
Yeah, me pointers, right.
I follow your tweets at the UConn games. It's all good. We definitely, you know, hope we're on the airwaves enough to get that kind of feedback.
Well, you're certainly doing things the right way, and I appreciate you taking so much time with me this evening. While the kids are away, and I know that you've got this is a great opportunity for you to see other places and do other things. So thank you very much for your time today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Take care. Good night.
All right. Bye-bye.